process to reunite the victims with their loved ones. This is, for us, an absolute priority.
The burials have begun for the victims of the New Zealand mosque shootings. This is Thursday, March 21st, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Also ahead, President Trump says tariffs on China trade will be enforced for a while. As an election approaches, India's prime minister faces increased criticism about that country's economy. And robots become multitaskers. All on today's VOA Asia. New Zealand Police Commissioner Mike Bush says he believes police officers stopped the gunman who killed 50 people at two mosques on his way to yet another attack. Bush says they believe they know where the gunman was going, but he won't say more because it is an active investigation. In a 74-page manifesto he released before the attack, the accused Australian gunman said he was going to attack mosques in Christchurch and Lynwood and then one in the town of Ashburton if he made it that far. As New Zealand police continue to work with families to positively identify those slain in last Friday's attack, members of the community started the burial of the dead Wednesday and pressed forward with their lives. VOA's Steve Miller has more from Christchurch.
Wednesday was a very busy day here in Christchurch, New Zealand, 5 days after the devastating attack that affected the community and resulted in the death of 50 of its members at two of the mosques last Friday. It was also the first day of many more to come, where those that were slain were laid to rest. Two Syrian refugees, a father and a son, were laid to rest in the city's memorial park. The funeral was attended by hundreds, some of which flew in from Invercargill, an imam I spoke to earlier today, to help with families to prepare for the burial ritual, as well as other Muslims from around the country. New Zealand Police Commissioner Mike Bush said that identifying the remaining bodies and getting them to their families so that burials can be performed remains an utmost priority.
The process to reunite the victims with their loved ones. This is, for us, an absolute priority for family reasons, for compassionate reasons, and for cultural reasons.
New Zealand Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern was also here in Christchurch today. She visited a local school. Her message to the students was clear. It's okay to grieve.
It is okay to ask for help, even if you weren't directly affected. These things, these images that people are seeing, they're really, really difficult to process.
While the city continues to grapple with the tragedy and discuss how to best move forward, what is striking is the number of tributes and memorials that continue to be erected here at Hagley Park across from the Al Noor Mosque. Adorning one of the fences on the streets adjacent to the park are links of love, paper links woven together with messages of love and support, which is an overwhelming theme that the community has expressed towards the Muslim community. In this letter left by a UK resident, it encourages residents to harness their strength because only love can fight hate. As the names of individuals who were killed becomes known from members of the Muslim community, we're also starting to see individual monuments and tributes crop up here at the park. This one is for Ansi Ali Baba. She was 23 years old and was slain last Friday. Flowers and notes from loved ones adorn this tree as a tribute to her memory. But a consistent theme expressed by members of the community about how closely knit they are perhaps can be best summed up by this poem. It was placed near the intersection near the Al Noor Mosque and concludes this way. We stand together to ignore the fuss, because in the end, they are us. Steve Miller, VOA News, Christchurch, New Zealand.
You are invited to read more about our top story by following us on Facebook at VOA Asia and the VOAnews.com website. These are among the top Asia stories you'll find right now on VOAnews.com. Militants carried out a pre-dawn assault Wednesday on a security outpost in southwestern Pakistan, killing at least six paramilitary forces. Government commission experts say it was a rare earthquake in South Korea that was triggered by the county's first experimental geothermal power plant. Soldiers are helping with the recovery effort as the death toll from flash floods and landslides that tore through Indonesia's Papua region tops 100, with dozens still missing. Chinese President Xi Jinping met with President of Harvard University, Lawrence Bacow, in Beijing Wednesday. Xi said exchanges on education is an important part of the China-U.S. relations. Expanded coverage of these stories and more on Facebook at VOA Asia and on the voanews.com website. President Trump said Wednesday a trade deal with Beijing was coming along nicely, with U.S. trade negotiators poised to head to China next week for another round of talks.
Now, we're not talking about removing them. We're talking about leaving them and for a substantial period of time, because we have to make sure that if we do the deal with China, that China lives by the deal, because they've had a lot of problems living by certain deals, and we have to make sure. Now, no president has ever done what I've done with China. China had free reign over our country, taking out $500 billion a year for many years. We actually rebuilt China in the truest sense of the word. We rebuilt China. But we're getting along with China very well. President Xi is a friend of mine. The deal is coming along nicely. We have our top representatives going there this weekend to further the deal. But no, we're taking in billions and billions of dollars right now in tariff money, and for a period of time that will stay.
Washington and Beijing have slapped import duties on hundreds of billions of dollars worth of each other's products in their dispute, raising costs, roiling financial markets, shrinking U.S. farm exports, and disrupting manufacturing supply chains. Phil Levy is a senior fellow on the global economy at the Chicago Council on Global Affairs and a professor at Northwestern University's Kellogg School of Management. Phil, why do you think that the tariffs need to stay on?
I don't think they do. I think the president is particularly enamored of tariffs, and he's set himself some conflicting goals, which put him in a very difficult spot. On the one hand, he wants a very quick agreement with the Chinese, and he also wants a very deep agreement. And what we're seeing is the tension between those two.
So what happens next, do you think?
Well, they've talked about an exchange of negotiators, but we've seen that before. Liu He is going to be visiting Washington. That was how they were supposed to avert all this trouble back in May of 2018. So I expect we'll have continued negotiations, and then the president's going to face a difficult choice, which is he will either strike a very limited deal or we will have ongoing tensions.
Well, the ongoing tensions, but is this doable in any way, shape, or form? How do you think, as an expert, that things should go forward or could go forward?
Well, I think we've hurt ourselves with the tariffs, and that's meant a sense of urgency. You've seen that in the reaction to the president's statement, because at the same time he's done this, he's kind of been promising a lot of his supporters, particularly farmers, that this problem's going to get fixed and these are going to go away. Now he's saying, well, maybe it's not going away until China does everything we like for a long time, which is a very different message. I think what we should do is have a more considered and focused approach to China, and not one that hurts American producers and consumers with tariffs.
What do you think China's reaction to what was said on Wednesday will be or has been?
I think it's dawning on the Chinese that the president has, negotiated himself into a very tough spot, which is that this is the retaliation he's put on is as painful to the U.S. as it is to China, and they can wait him out. And I think that's what they're likely to do. I don't think they're going to go for a lopsided deal where the president gets to either maintain tariffs on China while the Chinese drop theirs, or where he gets to slap them on any point in the future that he would like.
So what do you think China might do, if anything, as far as retaliation is concerned?
Well, I think they've already done what they're going to do in retaliation, in terms of they directly retaliated by imposing some tariffs, and they can make life difficult for the U.S. in a number of things. They can fail to follow the lead of U.S. regulatory agencies. They can be less helpful than they might otherwise be in other international affairs. I think they'd like to strike a deal, but they're going to let President Trump squirm on this one until he either accepts something sort of modest or decides he can't take it anymore.
How are the tariffs hurting not only the United States and China, but countries around the world?
Well, I think it's setting an unfortunate precedent where we ignore global trade rules. I think one of the biggest things is you've seen you see new stresses on the World Trade Organization that will hurt everybody. You also see distortions in trade where the Chinese, for example, have offered to buy more liquid natural gas from the U.S. That may be at the expense of an alternative supplier. And those kind of distortions are going to really stress the global trading system.
Phil Levy is a senior fellow in the global economy at the Chicago Council on Global Affairs and a professor at Northwestern University's Kellogg School of Management. As always, thanks, Phil.
Thank you.
Happening now in Asia, a Chinese national has been sentenced to 18 months in a U.S. prison in connection with a scheme to sell mislabeled dietary supplements to U.S. companies. Xu Jiabo was also sentenced to a year of probation for selling synthetic stimulant ingredients to a purported U.S. manufacturer of dietary supplements. That U.S. company was, in fact, an undercover informant for the U.S. government. Stay up to date with VOA. This is VOA Asia. As India prepares for general election starting April 11th, the Prime Minister Narendra Modi is being attacked by opposition parties for failing in his 2014 pledge to create millions of jobs for India's huge young population. Modi's Janata Party rebuts that criticism, saying that India, now the world's fastest growing major economy, is generating new opportunities. From New Delhi, Anjana Prasricha reports.
This is the first stop for people streaming in from rural areas near New Delhi, a busy city intersection from where contractors pick up daily wage labor. Many waiting here are despondent because they managed to get work for barely half the month.
I have the ability to work hard. I never turn down any work, but I would prefer to get a cleaner, a permanent job. The problem is one day I have money to buy rations, the next day I don't.
Opposition parties say the numbers of those grappling with joblessness or underemployment have risen to record high levels during Prime Minister Narendra Modi's administration, whether among the uneducated or educated. They cite reports from researchers and an unpublished leaked government survey showing soaring unemployment.
Our government is refusing to accept that we have a massive crisis and a potential disaster.
Prime Minister Modi's Bharatiya Janata Party, however, dismisses the job data, saying it focuses only on the 15% Indians who work in the formal economy. It cites industry reports showing that jobs have been created. The BJP says the issue is not jobs, but livelihoods, and that millions have found work in the infrastructure and transport sectors as India's economy expands. They are self-employed people like Chen Paul Singh. He quit his job and took a loan to buy a cab as the app-based taxi business boomed. In 4 years, Singh has earned enough to invest in two more cars.
I am much better off. I used to earn about $225 a month. Now, in some months, I can earn almost double that. It's been beneficial for me.
Although data paints conflicting pictures, economists say joblessness is one of the country's biggest challenges. A 2016 currency ban dried up jobs. The Prime Minister's Make in India campaign to kickstart manufacturing has made a slow start. And sluggish labor-intensive sectors cannot cater to growing numbers of job seekers.
More young people are entering the labor force. Millions want to leave agriculture but can't find construction work because construction activity has slowed down, because the investment rate in the economy has slowed down. No one is saying no investment is taking place, no new jobs are getting created. Of course they are, but nowhere close to the rate at which jobs are needed.
As jobs or lack of them generate heated debate, the final verdict will be given by millions of voters when they decide whether to give Prime Minister Modi a second term in office. Anjana Pasricha for VOA News, New Delhi.
Coming up, a new drug to battle tuberculosis. This is VOA Asia.
The news never stops, so keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English.
This news alert from VOA Asia. The leader of Thailand's oldest political party says if he becomes prime minister after Sunday's election, he'll make careful but forceful efforts to undo undemocratic constitutional clauses imposed by the military government that took power in 2014. This is VOA Asia. We continue now. A robotics company hopes to bring a robot into every home and business using a proprietary robotic platform that can be programmed and tweaked for a wide variety of users and uses. Deanna Mitchell takes a look at one of the world's most customizable robots. It's called Misty.
Intruder.
Someone's stealing your Intruder. Stuff? Misty the robot can monitor Intruder. That. Does a family member need assistance? Misty can do that too.
We want to create a robot that's just kick-ass and super easy to program, that has lots of different technical capabilities.
Misty Robotics calls their product an open robot platform, an advanced robotic foundation that can be programmed to fit a business or individual's specific needs.
Got super excited and realized that we're really at an important time where technology was starting to be available, like voice recognition and Microsoft cognitive services for doing object recognition, or IBM's tone analysis for reading people's voice and understanding that, and coupling that with this physical robot in your space to really start to create these amazing skills.
Readily customizable, Misty's arms can be swapped out, for example, to grip items or equipped to use laser pointers. Various sensors give it the ability to recognize voices and navigate spaces using cell phone class processors. It can even be programmed to drive onto its charging pad.
We believe that robots need to do many different things, very multi-purpose.
Misty is not Bernstein's only robotic creation. First was Sphero, a smartphone-controlled robotic ball. There was also BB-8, based on the Star Wars character, the company's best-selling robot so far. And now, Misty.
We get this robot into our lives that can really start to do useful stuff eventually, cooking and cleaning and doing our laundry and stuff like that, helping us out, but also being like our friend in our homes.
With a price tag of just over $2,000, Misty is expected to ship later this year. Deanna Mitchell for VOA News, Las Vegas, Nevada.
This news alert from VOA Asia. The Philippine Foreign Secretary heaped praise on China's ruling Communist Party during a visit to Beijing Wednesday, underscoring the growing distance between the Philippines and its ally partner, the United States, as China's regional, political, and economic influence rises. All the big stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. The World Health Organization is launching an oral drug regimen, it says, can more effectively treat people with multidrug-resistant tuberculosis. In advance of this year's World TB Day, which is March 24th, the WHO is issuing a call to action to eradicate the disease by 2030. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from WHO headquarters in Geneva.
Tuberculosis has plagued humans for thousands of years and continues to do so. TB remains the world's deadliest infectious disease, killing nearly 4,500 people a day and newly infecting 10 million people a year. Despite the grim statistics, much progress has been made in the diagnosis, prevention, and treatment of the disease. The World Health Organization says 54 million lives have been saved since 2000. But the WHO warns the gains risk being lost with the emergence of multidrug-resistant TB, or MDR-TB. The current treatment for MDR-TB involves a 2-year treatment course of painful injections, which provoke many bad side effects. The WHO says it is hopeful the new oral treatment program it is launching will be more effective in controlling the spread of the particularly virulent form of tuberculosis. The director of the WHO's global TB program, Teresa Kasayeva, tells VOA the new oral drug treatment the WHO is recommending has far fewer adverse side effects.
Of course, it will be definitely much, much easier, and there will not be need for regular frequent visits of the physicians or health workers for making these injections. No doubt, and again, we see from the data, the effectiveness, the treatment success will be definitely much, much higher.
The South African government has announced it plans to adopt the injection-free treatment. Kasayeva says the cost of the oral treatment is around $2,000, which is largely unaffordable for low-income countries. She says South Africa is engaging in talks with pharmaceutical companies to drop the price to $400. The WHO says South Africa is one of the 20 countries most affected by MDR-TB. Others include Russia, China, India, Nigeria, Pakistan, and Vietnam. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
This is VOA Asia. I'm Myra Melman in Washington. Chimpanzees are second only to humans as the most complex and diverse of the large primates. But a new report from a large group of scientists, including the Wildlife Conservation Society, say that humans are threatening the culture of our closest cousins. VOA's Kevin Enox reports.
Chimpanzees and the other great apes are our closest genetic relatives. They have complex cultural and behavioral habits that include tool use and sophisticated social interactions. But some new research suggests that our two species have trouble sharing the same space. When humans get too close to chimpanzees in the wild, the study says chimpanzees lose a lot of their culture.
And essentially what it found was cultural and behavioral diversity was reduced by 88% in those sites with the highest human impact.
Emma Stokes is with the Wildlife Conservation Society, which co-authored the study. She says there are a number of possible reasons why. It may be that fewer chimpanzees live in areas near humans, or it could be that more people mean fewer available tools and opportunities to use them. Whatever the reason, the impact is clear.
Some form of human impact has somehow directly reduced the availability of those resources, such as logging or habitat degradation. So it somehow influences the resource base on which these behavioral activities are based.
Stokes says that chimpanzees are adaptable and, in fact, may adapt to human encroachment with entirely new behaviors. But she suggests the better solution may be to think more broadly about why a piece of land or forest deserves to be protected.
I think we should be perhaps redefining or enriching our definition of forests that have high integrity or high intactness. It's not just about keeping the trees or even keeping the wildlife. It's also about keeping that behavioral and cultural diversity.
WCS says that logging was responsible for the loss of over 77% of Africa's intact forests between 2000 and 2013. In addition to putting wildlife, local communities, and economies at risk, the new report highlights the threat the unregulated and often illegal extraction of timber poses to a unique culture. Kevin Enox, VOA News.
This is Science in a Minute.
A large group of scientists say they have traced the origin of tiny meteorites that fell on a Turkish village in September 2015. The researchers suggest that a collision that created the Antonia impact crater on the asteroid 4 Vesta some 22 million years ago is what produced the pea-sized meteorites. Scientists found that the meteorites are of a type called howardite, which are said to originate from the surface of 4 Vesta, the second largest asteroid in the asteroid belt between Mars and Jupiter. Isotopic studies were used to determine that the meteorites in Turkey were of the howardite type. Researchers determined that the tiny meteorites were produced when a meteoroid about 1 meter in size fragmented at an altitude of about 27 kilometers as it entered Earth's atmosphere at a speed of 17 kilometers per second. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
You have been listening to VOA Asia. Thanks for joining us, and thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, our engineer, Nelson Lopes, our managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team of Jim Stevenson, Skylar Ogden, Doug Bernard, Keith Lane, and Anna Cook. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Enjoy your day.